Andrea from the perspective from Suffolk. Andrea.
Good morning, everybody. So let's have a little bit of audience participation just to start. How many people have actually read anything about Suffolk in The Guardian? Hands up. Oh, you do have a few Guardian readers in the house. Well, I have to tell you a little story about the coverage that we got in the front page. It was a complete surprise to us. Nobody from The Guardian had contacted the press office or asked to speak to me. But on the day of our council meeting, when we decided to ask the members whether they wanted to set the new strategic direction in a solidly conservative council, a more liberal indicating paper decided to splash a story of privatisation right across the front page. And I might come back to the role of the media in helping us to understand the new role of the state and the new role of the citizen and how we might understand that better. So there are a few media myths then. That Guardian headline has cost me a great deal of time and effort in trying to break those myths, and I'm very pleased to have the invitation here to be able to do so again. So what are the facts then? About 18 months ago, the council decided that we could see there were fundamental reductions in public sector funding coming, and we recognised we needed to do something different. So we started an inquiry into social capital, which, for those of you who are not terribly familiar with it, is about the amount of connectedness and relationships people have with others and within their community and the extent to which that gives them well-being. And if you think that our public services, and particularly local government, are actually about creating well-being for individuals and for societies, then social capital is incredibly important. So our new strategic direction is actually about transforming Suffolk, joining up public services so that they make more sense for customers, reducing their cost by 30%, and strengthening communities by building social capital so that when we need to redraw the line of what the state does and what citizens do for themselves, communities are more able to support themselves. There have been a few myths, as I say. We're not actually privatising everything at the council. We're not actually trying to reduce the council to about 500 staff, which is another one of the media headlines, and nor are we intending to meet just once a year to let contracts. I am very fortunate that I've been given a resource from BT, somebody who's creating some enormous thought leadership with us about a strategic direction which is actually about divesting services, putting them outside the council, giving up control for influence. So our vision is actually about a strategic council that sets policy, that has democracy right at its heart, that can really concentrate on community leadership, and that creates markets through a wealth of different enterprises in the area so that we can empower citizens through personalised budgets and get them to make choices about the sorts of services that they want to choose for themselves. So we kind of see the future of Suffolk a bit like a consumer champion, like a local witch magazine for our citizens. That has a fundamental difference on the organisational culture of a council, particularly one that has 28,000 staff. It's a very big change to lead. But we do see that our route map for getting there is about divesting services, putting them outside the county council, getting the county council to be much smaller and simpler, easier to understand. It is about helping to create social enterprises in Suffolk. It's also about achieving a more diverse local economy. We are not looking to one single private sector company to take our services and run them for a profit using taxpayers' money that they then return to private shareholders. I don't think that's what we ought to be doing with taxpayers' money. We want to keep Suffolk taxpayers' money in Suffolk, delivering more from Suffolk than we are able to do as the council. by which I mean developing lots of social enterprises who are able to be more efficient than we are and are certainly much smaller and simpler than we are. It is about getting the voluntary sector to change. It is about encouraging our staff's creativity to do things differently. And it does require a full rethink of our relationship with the citizen. So let me just give you some understanding of why it is that Suffolk thinks divestment is a good idea. And I am one of those people that will use big society and lesser government. But I also try and get over the sort of Radio 4 view of what big society is all about. And perhaps I'll touch on that in a minute. We think that there are at least six good reasons why we would want to divest services. First of all, it's cheaper. If we can divest our services to smaller enterprises, then actually we can reduce the massive corporate overheads in the organisation. That's another reason why the voluntary sector need to change, because many of those have now set up quite significant corporate overheads of their own in response to the need for complicated tendering arrangements and complicated monitoring either from ourselves or from central government. We also believe it will be easier for the council and for citizens to understand and have a clear relationship with the council when we no longer are also responsible for operational services. It's very difficult to have a strategic focus when you run operational services. The operational issues always drown out long-term decisions. So if the weather were to suddenly change and snow was to come down, there would be lots of people in my organisation who'd be more concerned about how we get school children home safely than making decisions about what we're going to do 3, 5, or 10 years hence. That's what I mean by the focus on operational delivery. We also think that if we invest in social enterprises, then they are more able to get joined up solutions that achieve outcomes for citizens rather than specified service outcomes. They deliver without having the organisational boundaries that large public agencies have. No matter how much we try to work across the whole public system, we tend to find we fall back to the loyalties of our own organisations, and organisational barriers cause duplication and additional cost. We also want local people to take more control, to feel that they are able to exercise different solutions to services in different communities. Suffolk is a huge county. It has very different communities: urban, rural, wealthy, not so wealthy. Those communities need different solutions, and they will design our services differently than we as service providers, with all our professional blindedness, would create them. We want to unlock our staff to be able to go outside the organisation and do what they know best for citizens without all of the process and red tape that stops them actually being innovative. And, you know, many times when I go around and look at frontline services, I find people breaking the rules because actually it's better for them to do something locally than what the organisation requires them to, because procurement has said so or HR has said so. You know, we can actually get rid of all of that bureaucracy that costs so much money. But we're not just talking about commissioning. In fact, I don't let the C word be used in Suffolk, because commissioning is something that local government and health have turned into a whole new bureaucracy of its own, requiring endless meetings, endless people, and just demonstrating that actually we really don't know how to work together for citizens when we get into these large, centrally dominated organisations. Let me give you a couple of examples just to make the theory sound more real to you. We're currently at the county looking at getting out of residential care. Like many strategic authorities, we provide some of our residential care homes. In fact, we have 16. There are about 160 residential care homes in Suffolk as a whole, so we've got about 10% of the market. And we're currently consulting the public on actually doing something different in residential care. You can see the newspaper headlines that it's generated. I call these fairly scandalous headlines that just appeal to people's fear. Actually, what we're thinking is, If you look at the number of people who are placed in our own residential care homes, there's 562 of them. They cost us about £600 a week per bed. If we look at the 2,300 people who we place in private care, they cost us from about £300 a week. So we are asking all of the taxpayers in Suffolk to pay more money to place people in our own care homes than by placing people in private sector care homes. And these are homes of the same standard. We're not talking about a lesser standard. We're talking about a less efficient model. But somehow, we as citizens believe that it's better if the local authority provides the care. And people in Suffolk are telling me that the care homes are better in the local authority than they are in the private sector. Now, I've been round and looked at all our care homes, and the reason that we need to come out of many of them is because they have a long maintenance backlog. They're too small. They're normally about 30 beds, whereas the private sector will tell you you need 60 or 70 beds in a unit to make it viable. They're not particularly well designed. They're not all en suite. Actually, they can't cope with some of the new standards that are coming in, so some of them won't be able to be accredited. But still, the public think it is better for the council to provide care homes. There's something deep in here, or maybe it's in here, that we as citizens need to rethink in the future. It simply doesn't make any sense for Suffolk to continue to deliver something that the private sector, in this case, could deliver much more efficiently. And there are lots of people in the charitable sector who are beginning to recognise that this is a new opportunity for them. I went to an organisation called the Seckford Foundation, which is a charitable trust in Woodbridge on the coast in Suffolk. They have a residential care home of 19 beds, far smaller than we can run ours, and they have 30 sheltered flats with extra care in them. I wandered around the building, which is a converted listed building, and thought, I'd like to live here myself. Not when I'm old, now. It was lovely. The place was decorated with antiques to a quality that was just amazing. And when I asked the Seckford Foundation how they managed to deliver this level of care at a much cheaper cost than we were able to, it's because despite being a charity, they'd actually got commercial and business skills. But they're also able to tap into private givers in a way that the council isn't. So they'd shown round an individual, and their individual had some money that they just wanted to give away to a good cause. And the manager joked with this individual about, well, when you send a Christmas card, you know, put your cheque inside it. And that's exactly what she did. She put a cheque for £100,000 inside the card and said, make sure you decorate the new flats in the standard that you think people would want to come to. You know, we cannot possibly, as the state, have that sort of philanthropy because there are attitudes about state provision. You know, it just doesn't make sense. We need to unlock what's in our minds and what's in our hearts and rethink some of that. And we all know that in adult social care, one of the biggest problems is the level of dementia that we're going to be facing. This is an example of an enterprise that is set up in Suffolk in a rural village called Debenham, which has been set up by the individual in this photograph who runs an organisation that now provides support for people in the local area with dementia. He runs it with volunteers. He has about 50 active volunteers and a group of trustees, and basically they provide information, guidance. They have a telephone hotline, a bit like the Samaritans for crisis. They have drop-in centres, they have luncheon clubs, they have activities. They support both those with dementia and those who care for people with dementia. This service costs the county council absolutely nothing. They run it within the community for the community. It is seen by the community as part of the fabric of society. People willingly support it and cherish it and want to grow it because it has come from the people. This is what I mean by bigger society. This is what I mean by people taking control over services. It is not this sort of Radio 4 version, in my view, of somehow you and I, despite doing our full-time jobs, and in my case looking after the kids, or in other people's cases looking after their elderly relatives, are somehow going to volunteer to go and run the library. You know, that's a nonsense. What we are talking about is creating social investment, making sure that we help Suffolk's economy through the recession by stimulating lots of small businesses and social enterprises and reinventing the third sector to be able to have a vibrant local economy. Lots of organisations actually using Suffolk's money, employing local people and doing good in Suffolk. And the only difference between the social enterprise and the private sector is social enterprises return their profit into the good of the service rather than paying their shareholders. They are just as commercial as the private sector. They have to be, otherwise they would go out of business. And they look for new business everywhere. It isn't like the third sector, and the third sector really do need to transform to be like the social entrepreneurs that run these successful new businesses. We do need to rethink commercial skills. And one of the things that we're doing in Suffolk to try and help the voluntary sector to change is actually setting up a voluntary sector consortium so that actually smaller voluntary sector organisations can take larger share of the council's investment because they can procure once and then subcontract to each other. We also want to begin to see our budgets as social investment because social enterprises find it very difficult to get debt finance. They don't have something that they can raise money against at the bank. They have an idea, generally, and most of them are poor and have no finance to set up the business. I'd like the council's base budgets to be investment funds. But they can't be investment funds so long as I'm using them to pay employees and all of the buildings that I have. So actually Suffolk needs to reduce the size of its workforce and it needs to reduce all of our buildings, everything that leads to those expensive corporate overheads, to be able to have the investment money to set people up and for them to be able to develop the commercial skills to work without thinking that actually they just get a grant handout every year or a base budget every year that they can trim at the edges. The ultimate prize, of course, would be to have a way of creating social investment that enables us to fund long-term outcomes, 20-year outcomes, the sort of thing that the Swindon model was talking about with high-demand families. Like many other organisations, we have a number of pilots working differently in terms of early intervention with families that actually aren't in our system. The difficulty we have is that costs more money because most of these people have unmet needs. They're not in the system at the moment. I'm not spending any of our child protection money on them. I'm not spending our social care budgets on them because they work at the margins of society in the black economy, normally third-generation worklessness families. We need to find a way where we can help these families actually have the ability to solve their own problems rather than us continually intervene in their lives for 20 years. But we need the money to create the investment to do that when we know that the savings fall to other public agencies or sometimes to central government rather than in the locality. And social impact bonds are a good start, but they're not sufficient because generally they require too big a project and the investors require too much of a return. We need to find some ways of having much smaller social investments. So just a few concluding points. I'd like to return to some of the things I was saying at the beginning. And this is fundamental, I think, to how do we move on in our own thinking as citizens about our relationship with the state. One of the most difficult things, it seems to me, is the media have got stuck on the budget reductions. Every day, every headline, every comment on the radio, and every news clip is about some service or other being closed. In Suffolk, one of the most talked about closures is actually us ceasing to provide 60 school crossing patrols. Now, these lollipop ladies, where the saving is £157,000 if they all go, has got far more newspaper headlines than actually the debate about what should we do about the future of adult social care and what should we expect in terms of state provision. I have 34 petitions from Suffolk that are going to be presented to next week's council meeting about saving our lollipop ladies. I can't think of a better example than actually the community or others in the community or the local parish councils providing lollipop ladies. If you think about the job of a school crossing patrol, it's a lovely job to do. Apart from days like yesterday when it was raining, generally, people really like what you're doing. Every person that you help thanks you as they cross the road. It's actually a job you do for a couple of hours twice a day. It's the sort of job that will get people out with social connections, creating social capital. But no, in our current thinking, the state has to provide it. Well, who decided that the state was responsible for getting your children to school safely? That's not a county council responsibility. But the role of the media in whipping up very easy headlines about saving services shouldn't be overlooked. I don't believe that the media just report on the facts. I think they create the news. And I think they feed off each other. And those stories are running like snowballs. If you have campaigns about saving our services, it actually keeps the services in aspic. It makes people think that actually they have to be only as they are. It stops us unlocking our thinking about creativity and innovation. If you have Save Our Services headlines, it appeals to our hearts and our vulnerability. And most of us are feeling scared about the future because we know it's very different from the current form. Actually, what we need are headlines that ask the questions about what should the state do and what should we as citizens do? And what can social enterprises do? And how can private companies change to be able to see this as a new opportunity? I think we've all got too used, both as citizens and as people who provide public services, to having a blueprint, to being told what to do and then being monitored to death on whether we're doing it or not. We need to grow up. We need to learn to live with uncertainty. And we need to take the future in our own hands and see this as an opportunity to design something better. Thank you for listening.